Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Sunday, March 18th, 2018. This is episode 1472. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Tech Guy. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them to your door ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TECHGUY15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. It's all here. It's all wrapped up and tied up with a bow in this show. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number if you want to talk to me and talk about tech. Anything with a chip in it, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And that's a good thing to know. In fact, it's the only thing you need to remember, really. Everything I talk about ends up there, all the links. You don't have to write anything down. I know you've got a busy day. You're driving around and doing stuff and doing honeydews or whatever it is. And so don't feel like you have to write anything down, because we're just going to do it for you. We'll put it all up at techguylabs.com. And you know what? I know you might say, oh, yeah, you'll probably charge me a lot of money. No, it's free, absolutely free. Just go to no sign up, nothing. techguylabs.com. So last night I decided to quit Facebook. I did. I decided. I thought, you know, I've really had it now. We've talked for a while about one of the biggest privacy issues on Facebook, which they've never done anything about. You've probably heard me say, don't do those quizzes. Everybody does them, right? Which Game of Thrones character are you? Which character from Dallas are you, you know? Are you smarter than a fifth grader? There, if you think about them and you look at those you know, little quizzes that they're show up all the time on Facebook, and you think about them, you realize they're really kind of link baity. You know what I mean? They're like designed to get you to go, oh, I have to find out. And a lot of times, like, people will take them and it says, you're the smartest person in your group. And they have to share that, right? I am the smartest. I'm the best speller of anybody. I'm in the 100th percentile. Right? You know what those quizzes? So here's a something that I've mentioned before, but I don't know if people really took seriously. Of course, anytime you take one of those quizzes, the quiz maker has access to all of your information. All of your information. Name, address, serial number, birthplace, party affiliation, jobs, since you were born. All of that goes right in their hopper. But here's the worst part. And this is something Facebook refuses to do anything about. It drives me nuts. Not only do they get everything of yours, they get everything of your friends. So even though I never take a quiz, ever, I know that all of my material, all of my personal information is still being offered up to these quiz makers by my friends who do take quizzes. And I know because I see it in my timeline. I'm smarter than you are. I took a quiz. No, you're not. You fell for it. And not only did you give them your personal information, you gave them my personal information. Now, Facebook says, well, no, that information, that friend-to-friend information is only to be used in order to improve user experience in the app. And it may not be sold on or used for advertising. They say that. But they don't enforce it. And we know now, we've known this for a while, there was an article about this a year ago, but now there's a whistleblower proving it, that in fact, a company called Cambridge Analytica, owned by Robert Mercer, the hedge fund billionaire, and headed at the time by Steve Bannon, used this technique, these quizzes, these benign quizzes, so-called, to build a system that could profile U.S. voters and violated Facebook's policy knowingly to harvest 50 million U.S. voter profiles. 50 million. Now, Facebook knew that there was this whistleblower and knew that this article was going to be published in The Guardian. The day before it came out, they quickly banned Cambridge Analytica. But they'd known about, trust me, we'd known about this for a year. The Guardian wrote about it a year ago. And Facebook did nothing about it until this whistleblower comes along and says, yeah, I did it. I was the guy who did it. Let me tell you how it worked. This is the quote. We exploited Facebook to harvest millions of people's profiles and built models to exploit what we knew about them and target their inner demons. That was the basis the entire company, Cambridge Analytica, was built on. Facebook knew this. And Facebook still has this policy that if you take a quiz, your information is given to this company and all of your friends' information. That's it. I had it. That's it. It's done now. Now, Facebook, thanks to a new European rule, the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, in Europe, a company like Facebook that has information about you has to give you the right to delete that information entirely from their databases. Facebook's never offered that to you before. In fact, all you could do was deactivate your account. And then if you ever, by accident, logged into it, it would go, we're still here. All that stuff's still here. Facebook said, yeah, maybe down the road we'll delete it, but they made no commitment, no time frame. GDPR changed that. The laws, not only is the law strict, it goes into effect in a month and a half, and the punishments are a percentage of the revenue of the company. So it's not a $100,000 slap on the wrist. It could be billions for a company with the revenue of Facebook or Google. So fortunately, this law, which was enacted in the European Union, Facebook has to offer this feature. And sure, they could just say, well, only if you live in the European Union, but they didn't. They said, yeah, well, it's too complicated to figure out where somebody's from. So there is now a button you can press to delete your Facebook data. Not deactivate your account like it used to be, but to delete your data. And you have 2 weeks. So if you re-log in any time in the next 2 weeks, don't worry, we'll bring it back. We'll give you 2 weeks to think it over. Facebook's terrible. When you do this, by the way, they show you pictures of your friends and say, your friends are sad. You're leaving. They really guilt trip you. They don't. Wow. Your friends are going to be so sad. You want to leave them a message about why you're doing this horrible thing? Do you want to tell your friends why you're doing this to them? I didn't tell my friends. I'm telling you, you're my friends. I'm out of here. I am out. And I'm not saying you should be. And my wife's appalled. She says, that's our whole history. Now, yeah, I have all those pictures myself. I don't need them. That's not where I've stored my life. And bye-bye Facebook. And frankly, it really makes me mad that this company has done this to so many, 1.5 billion people. Just crazy. So bye-bye, Facebook. Happy to leave you. Now I have to decide, well, should I do the same with Twitter and Google? You can't really leave Google, can you? Because you could stop using Chrome in their browser, I guess. You could deactivate a Google account, I guess. But but there isn't any evidence that Google's doing this friend-to-friend thing. That was the last straw. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. We could talk about that. We can talk about anything on your mind. That's what this show is about, technology and figuring out what it means in our lives and what we're going to, how it changes what's going on and how it improves life and sometimes, you know, does some bad things too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take your calls in just a second. Kim Schaffer's there. She's ready. She's taking your calls. She worked last night at the Irish bar. We're going to find out what that was like. A lot of Guinness down the river. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Ms. Schaffer, you survived your long night of green beer.
Barely. I'm exhausted.
You know, it's funny because Lisa and I went out to dinner last night, and we saw all these people with, you know, green hats and green dealy bobbers, and I even saw one guy with a kilt walking toward the bar, and I thought, oh, we should go by because we have an Irish bar.
Yeah, you have the one.
McGuire's.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I went over to McGuire's, and they had the band, and they had Irish dancing, and it was quite a party.
Yeah.
Velvet ropes set up.
Oh, we didn't have velvet ropes. We just had wall-to-wall people.
Yeah. Yeah. People take this this St. Patrick's Day thing seriously.
It was fun, but it was intense. It was a multiple-hour cardio event is what it was.
Yeah. 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 You have
My
to run
Fitbit,
back and forth.
Was like, got to work out. It actually died.
Well, see, you're one of the few people who actually got healthy in St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah,
it was good for you.
But you know, my boss is so cool. He gave me a bottle of whiskey at the end of the night.
Oh,
so I got to go home and have my
little leftover
cap.
Jameson. All right.
No, it's actually from the castle that I went to my cousin's wedding at, Slane Castle. They've got a distillery, and we're now carrying that in the bar, kind of, because
encourage them to do that.
I encourage them to carry it. Oh. And
so this is your commission.
So he gave me a bottle.
Nice. Isn't that sweet?
It was very sweet.
What a nice boss you have.
He's very nice.
Much nicer than your boss here. So you got up bright and early.
Yeah.
A smile on your face.
My voice. That I was yelling at people all night long.
And answered the phones, and you've lined up some wonderful people, I'm sure.
Yeah. So let's go to Canada. New Brunswick, Canada. Nathan.
All right. Let's do that. Hello, Nathan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm calling because I use Microsoft Outlook on both my Android phone and my iPad.
Yeah.
Great app, but I put a email address on there that I get a lot of really sketchy emails in that app, but I need access to that account because there's certain people that send me emails through that address. But I think like some of them have been kind of, their accounts have been taken over a little bit. So my concern is, can I get malware or viruses just from the emails loading themselves onto my phone?
That's a great question. Yeah. So, technically, yes. So the way nowadays most email programs work is they render the email. And a lot of email is in something we call HTML, the same markup language that's used on the web, including, by the way, JavaScript, images, all of the stuff that you'd see on a web page. And many email programs render that even in the preview pane so that if there's malware in that email, which there can be, having it be rendered means that even if you don't open the email, just having it visible in the preview pane can activate it. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. On a mobile, first of all, Microsoft has done a lot in Outlook to kind of protect you. And you'll notice a lot of email programs won't load images unless you explicitly ask them to. They're careful about loading dangerous JavaScript and so forth. So I think in general now, Outlook's pretty safe on the desktop. But the really good news is on iOS and Android, it's very unlikely that those emails will contain anything that's going to impact you there. They're almost all designed for Windows. So I don't know of any exploits that would allow a bad guy to hijack an iPhone or an Android phone from an email. I don't know of anything like that yet. I'm saying is it's theoretically possible, but as far as we know, nobody's doing it.
So it's probably not worth it to disconnect that email and then the only
no.
access it on a browser.
Yeah. I mean, it's concerning. Well, it's more dangerous in a browser, to be honest with you. It's more dangerous in the browser than it is in Outlook.
Okay.
Because the browser really doesn't have those protections. It's designed to render everything it gets sent. So when you use a web, even, you know, web-based mail on a browser, you really are then more vulnerable than you are if you use Outlook. So I'd stick with Outlook.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's one of the reasons I don't like HTML email. It's also heavy, right? You get, but it's pretty. People like it because your email can have fonts, it can have images, it can have links. Links, another reason this is dangerous, that are obfuscated. Links that you can't tell. They look like they're, for instance, you will get in the next month, I guarantee you, everyone will, emails from somebody claiming to be the United States Internal Revenue Service. In New Brunswick, you probably get it from the Canadian Revenue Service, the tax authority. We all get them. These are scam emails. The IRS will not email you. They'll send you snail mail, but they will not email you. So they're scams. And the people who design these emails will, among other things, they'll do everything they can to hack you, including perhaps put malware payloads in the HTML of the email. But they also will put links in there. And they'll look like, you know, it'll say irs.gov. The link on the web, on the email, will say irs.gov. Click this link to... and they say scary things. We are about to garnish your wages because of a lien against you. You have 30 days to respond to prevent this. Click here, irs.gov/respond. Now, if you just look at it on the page, it looks like it's, well, that's irs.gov. How could that be fake? But it's not. That's what's visible on the page. Sometimes you can hover your mouse over it and you'll see a long, strange address that's actually the actual address. But sometimes you can't. Depends on the email client. And so that's another problem with HTML mail. It obscures what's really going on behind a glossy veneer that makes you feel safe. It's not. And sometimes it depends on how well patched your machine is, how protected you are, and this has nothing to do with running antivirus software or malware bytes or anything like that. That is not going to protect you. If your machine is fully patched, that's really about the only way. But if it isn't, and you click that link, going to that website, which might even look exactly like the IRS website, going to that website could infect your machine. It's that bad. So really, HTML, when I send emails, I send text. Sometimes, occasionally, I use what they call rich text format that doesn't have the same problems, but does give you some layout capability. But I prefer plain text. Email should be plain text. It's lighter weight. It's not as fat. And it's a lot safer because a link can't be obfuscated. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a break. Come back. More of your calls. 8888. Ask Leo. That is an unobfuscated phone number. Give me a ring. Where'd I get the hot clock? Oh, yeah, I saw that on my Galaxy S9. So I use a widget that I rather like called Chronos. Chronos. And this is no lunch today. Thank you. This is the Chronos Flex version of that widget. But let me show you the whole Chronos here. Chronos. So it has a variety of widgets, and you can save them. These are all the different widgets you have. You have the Flex, which I use, which can have a calendar and weather in it. Pixel Plus, which I guess is supposed to look like the Pixel. Weather, calendar, forecast, clock plus forecast, clock plus weather. Analog, Flex, news, clock plus, anyway, stocks. So I use the Chronos Flex widget. And what that gives you is you can have a clock with an alarm. You can have a tap action so the clock goes to the system clock, which is the default. But I could also have it go to my other clock, which is Timely, which I actually have it installed on here. You can show date, show week numbers, show next alarm, show battery percentage. There's lots of settings, and that's just the time. There's a weather panel. You choose the source, have all sorts of weather information. Stocks, I don't use that. calendar events I do use because I want to have my calendar events show up, and you can choose which calendars. And it's very, you know, there's a lot of, I have a semi-transparent gray background and all that stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do, and then you can see what that's going to look like. And you can resize it too, by the way, which is nice. So you can, if you have more space, you can make it more information, less space, you can. Why, the vernal equinox is on Tuesday. How exciting. Have less information. So, you know, that's it. That's the Kronos widget. It's, I think it's, there's free, but there's a paid version or something like that. Oh, they wanted a countdown timer. Well, that's a little program I wrote for Android in App Inventor. It's not a much of a program. And I can, if they want that, I can send that to them. It's an Android program. But it's not really going to be very useful for anybody because... Where's my... it's not... It's written hardwired with my timings. I mean, it'd be pretty easy to go change it. But so that knows that there's, for instance, 56 seconds left in the break. Commercials, I do a blue background. When I'm talking, it's green. When it gets to 1 minute left, it turns to yellow. When it's 30 seconds left, it turns to red because I'm never on time. So this is very handy. And it's written in App Inventor, which is a very easy way to do Android programming, simple Android programming without... complications. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones. We go line one, Frank in Fontana, California. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, Leo, thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure. Welcome.
Thank you. My question is, I have a bunch of PDFs, and I called a week or two ago talking about trying to put some dates and formats on there.
You wanted to timestamp them. Because architectural stuff. Did you end up using any of the programs that we talked about that were designed for that kind of thing? Like, what was it, Blueprint?
There was Blueprint. There was a couple of them, and they were way more than what I needed.
Yeah.
They were for coding software.
Yeah. Whatnot. Yeah, idea was automated. It would, in an automated fashion, look for an empty spot in the PDF and put a timestamp on there and stuff. Yeah, that's overkill. That makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Right. So now what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to just backpedal just a little bit. And so what we end up doing, we have a large number of PDFs that we print from. And then when each selected job gets, say, 50 to 300 different prints, I want to be able to print those out, but then print them in order. And the way we have our file name structure, there is no rhyme or reason. It's somewhat sequential.
Yeah.
So I've created a database, an Excel sheet, that has each file name and each group number. So I want to be able to print it by group number and then file name, just like you could in Excel and sort it.
Right.
And I want to be able to print those in order.
Yeah.
And so what I'm doing now is using that Excel sheet and copying that to Notepad. And just creating a little batch file that prints it.
Yeah. This is how programmers get born.
Right. And that's what I'm doing now, too. I've done little scripts.
It's programming the hard way, but it's programming.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So you're using Excel. Excel has... what we call macro capability using Visual Basic for Applications that allows you to kind of program it. It's not Excel. A lot of people use Excel as a database. I mean, you could get more sophisticated. You know what I would look at I'm going to give you another maybe overcomplicated solution. But this actually sounds like a good candidate for a program called FileMaker, which is actually a real database program. Each one of your forms would be an entry in the database. You could even have it generate these forms kind of automatically. FileMaker is a database that focuses on presentation. So databases have a couple of different parts. There's, of course, the part that holds data, and you design a structure for the data that reflects what you need, you know, time, date, you know, parts, whatever it is that you need, and you design that database, you can have then the other part of this would be the input, a way to have an employee or yourself enter the data for each different record. And then the final part is what they call sometimes in database programs, reports, which are really just printouts. And a database program is sophisticated enough to do what you're doing kind of manually, painfully, automatically. So you would say, all right, I'd like to see all the reports from 1 to 23 printed in order or reverse order or alphabetical or any order you want. I want you to fill in an index number. So instead of using these basically static PDFs and trying to figure out what order to print them in, you'd be creating them with the database on the fly, which is much more flexible because if you want to make a change to a PDF, it's an easy thing to do. It's just changing the data in the database. In effect, the database would generate the PDF each time you wanted to print it out. And FileMaker is particularly designed for beautiful printouts. It really, they focused on presentation. It's actually designed also for beautiful input. It's Windows and Mac. It was originally a Macintosh program. Apple bought the company. I don't know if Apple's still doing it or if the company spun off. I feel like they spun off to FileMaker.com. But it's really, really powerful. And it's, you could do this also in Microsoft Access. If you have Office, you could do it in Access. But Access, I find a little more difficult. FileMaker is a little bit more intuitive. FileMaker has another feature which I really like, especially for businesses. It's a multi, can be set up as multi-user. So you can have one computer running a FileMaker server, which many people can log into, add data entry. As you grow, this is a very nice feature. So again, maybe this is overkill for you, but given what the energy you're putting into this at this point to get this to print out in order, and it sounds like you have to do that kind of each time. And so that adds up. One of the reasons people end up writing programs is to automate something you do over and over again. It's a little more time consuming at the beginning because you have to write the program. But once it's done, then these things happen automatically. There's a guy I know who he's an engineer. His philosophy is if anything takes more than 30 seconds, I write a program, and I do it more than once, I write a program to do it. He has a program to order his wife flowers, for instance. And that's somebody who's very proficient at programming, right? And it comes easily to them, and it's you know, they just write it all out. But FileMaker, I think, is really good for somebody who isn't a programmer but wants to generate custom forms or printouts and wants to control how they're printed. I think this sounds like the perfect thing for you. There's a free trial, so you can see. Expect a little bit of time up front to understand it. Although, again, I don't think it's too difficult. You drag fields on. This has a lot of sophisticated little widgets that you can drag on that become the data entry form. You can then create reports from that data entry form or create separate reports and print them out in order. I feel like this is you're ready for this. If you're doing this in a spreadsheet and batch files, it's time, and PDFs, it's time. Instead of doing the PDFs, you'll be creating these, and it'll be much more flexible for you. They'll look just like the PDFs, but it'll be much more flexible. And it would solve that issue that you called us the first time where you said, I'd like it to have an index number. You know, each report have a unique number. You could have all of that set up. So you could look at how to do this with Microsoft Access. Since you already have Office, that usually comes with Office. Or I would get the free version of FileMaker and play with it a little bit. And I feel like that FileMaker sounds like it's perfect for you. It's aesthetic, too. It prints beautiful forms easily. Does that and maybe I've given steered you toward another product that's overkill for what you want.
No, we have access to Access. The other rub is that the company that I'm working with is actually running XP.
God. Well, FileMaker will work with XP. I mean, that's the good news. It works with all versions of Windows. It's an old program. I mean, it's been around for decades. But I think it's still one of the best. I think for people who want to automate business processes and aren't programmers, you know, and they don't want to become a, you know, data processing expert, this is a very good choice. Oh, wait a minute. The newest version, somebody's telling me the newest, Knox Harrington's saying the newest version of FileMaker requires Windows 7, but you might be able to find an old version. Well, also, Irvine Robb is saying, you know, maybe he would like this batch print PDF files. Maybe this is, so there's a little article about batch. We'll put this in the show notes from the Houston Chronicle, how to do batch printing of PDF files. Maybe that's the simplest thing to do. I hate to see somebody revert to batch files. That feels so primitive. Anyway, I hope that helps a little bit. I like to see, it's in a way, it's worth putting the time in at the front end to simplify stuff in the long run. And I feel like FileMaker is perfect for that kind of thing. Anyway, worth a try. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ooh, look at this. Look at here. Our sponsor for the this portion of the Tech Guy show today, brought to you by WordPress. Loving the WordPress. My website, leolaporte.com, my blog, is on WordPress. Actually, I've used WordPress for my blog since it started early 2000s with Matt Mullenweg. It was one of the very first content management systems. And, you know, it's become so successful over time that now 30% of all the web pages in the world run on WordPress. 30%. The number two content management system isn't even close. I mean, it's just dominant. That tells you something. People love WordPress. It's easy to work with, easy to use, produces a great result. And when you use WordPress.com, which is their hosted solution, they do all the hard stuff so you can focus on the stuff you love to do, the content, the page. If you have a business and you don't have a website, you really need one. It's not enough to have a Facebook page or a Twitter account. You've got to have, you can have those, but you've got to have a place, a home on the web that's yours, that you own, that when you link something on Facebook or Twitter, it goes back to your site, that you can direct customers to. In fact, WordPress.com has really simple social sharing. Every post on there can have a button that says, put this, share this on your Twitter or your Facebook, which means your customers and your clients, your readers, they can help promote you by putting it on their social feeds too. I just love WordPress.com. It gives you the freedom and flexibility to share your voice, your work, your way. Make your site on your own. You don't need any technical expertise. It's easy as can be at WordPress.com. They give you all the tools you need and a lot of great templates so you can choose a style, a look that fits you. Plugins, hundreds of them, to do everything. They have the best anti-spam plugin for commenting, the best. That's part of your WordPress. I use the AMP plugin, which makes my pages load super fast on mobile, but there are many, many more. A great customer support team. They're there 24/7, Monday through Friday, so you can ask questions, get help, and they're there on the weekends too. E-commerce, you bet. WordPress has e-commerce now, a big buy button if you want just one thing, or you can have a very sophisticated online store. It's all available to you at WordPress.com, and plans start at just $4 a month. Built-in SEO, social sharing, specialized plugins. No wonder 30% of all the websites in the world, 30% run on WordPress. Get started today with 15% off your new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/techguy. To create your website. Some of the biggest publications in the world, some of the best, use WordPress. And every time I talk about WordPress with people like Steve Gibson, and they go, oh yeah, I use WordPress. WordPress, yeah, well, of course you do. WordPress.com/techguy, 15% off your brand new website. WordPress.com/techguy. And we thank WordPress for their support, making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 88 Ask Leo, the phone number. Taylor in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Taylor. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I called you a long time ago and said, hey, I was switching phones and I used two-factor authentication.
Good.
I couldn't get my tokens transferred over to my new phone. And you gave me a tip that said, go to manual and keep that code because two-factor is time-based. And I did that, and I'm a LastPass user, and I stored those codes in secure notes in LastPass.
Okay.
Well, then I don't know if this was recent or not, but I recently discovered if you use the LastPass authenticator, LastPass will automatically store those codes in the cloud for you. That way when you transfer phones, that data transfers.
Yeah, which is nice. So let me explain what's going on. We always tell people to use two-factor authentication because it helps protect your stuff. Your bank probably uses it. Google, Twitter, Facebook, they all use it. The idea is you have your login and password. But in addition to that, the first time you use one of those accounts on a new machine, whether it's a computer or a tablet or a phone, it'll say, okay, this is the first time you're using this. We need a second factor of authentication. And so the factors that you – it's all about proving you are who you are. So a password, something you know, is one way. But biometrics, a fingerprint, iris scan, face recognition, those are something you are – that's the second factor of authentication. There's also something you have. The original two-factor authentications were based on little dongles or cards that would generate time codes every 30 seconds, a new code, and you'd use that. Nowadays, you can use your phone to do that with special software, authenticator software. Google makes it. Microsoft makes it. A lot of companies make it, including, as you say, LastPass. And what it'll do is you have a secret number that's associated with you and your account. Only you have that secret number, and you keep that secret. That's what LastPass would be storing, by the way. And it merges that with the current time of day to generate a six-figure code. And the reason they do the time of day thing is so that it can change every 30 seconds. So even if a bad guy were to get that second factor, he can't figure out what the secret number is from it. It's not reversible. And it's only good for 30 seconds, so he's got only 30 seconds. Say he knows your password. He knows your login. He's sitting at a computer. Right. He would have to he has 30 seconds to use that six-digit code, and then it's no good anymore. So all of this really is a great way to secure. I use it, and I encourage everybody to use two-factor wherever you can. And then you can use LastPass's authenticator program. Here's the only reason I don't use that, because I love and trust LastPass. It's a single point of failure. So how did the guy get your password? What if the guy got your LastPass database somehow and got all your passwords, and in there was stored your authenticator codes? Oops. Now authentication isn't really a second step. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a single point of failure. So I use something that does the same thing. There are a number of these. I use something called Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. And they also will store that secret number, so you don't have to write it down anywhere. But, you know, the truth is you could use Google Authenticator, and I did this for a long time. A lot of times you get a QR code instead of a number. You can get both. I will do a screenshot of the QR code and put that in LastPass. So that's stored in LastPass, and then use Authenticator. But, again, nowadays I use Authy because they would have to hack LastPass and Authy. Or have my phone. I just feel like it's a little bit more secure to do it that way.
Well, thanks for the information, Leo. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I thank you for asking because, I celebrate anybody who says, I want to be more secure. And I always appreciate the opportunity to plug second-factor authentication. The Google Authenticator is a great choice. But you have this problem because – so let's say you're using it, on Twitter. And you say, I'm going to turn on two-factor, and that's in the Twitter settings. It will then show you, one of those square QR codes with all the blobs on it, right? And it says, okay, you can add us. They'll give you the long number if you want, but it's a lot to enter. It's 20 or 30 numbers. It's a lot to enter. So most people say, I'll use a QR code. Then you launch your authenticator, in this case Google Authenticator, and you say, I'm going to add an account. And Google says, okay, you want to do the QR code? Yes. And the camera fires up. And you just aim it at that code on the screen, and it adds it to your authenticator. Then you close the window, and that QR code is gone forever. So if you get a new phone and you get rid of the old phone, you want to set up a new authenticator, you have to go through that entire process again, and it's going to invalidate all the authenticators. Now, I get a new phone every 3 minutes, so it's impractical for me to do that. So I use a free service. And I trust them, called Authy, Authy.com. And they store encrypted, and you give them the password, so they can't get it. But you use a good long encryption passphrase or password to encrypt it. They store those secret numbers. And then when you put Authy on a new phone, I just did that, got the Galaxy S9 this week, put Authy on the phone. And then you'll give it the login for Authy, and then you'll give it the decryption password. And this is the key. and you'll unencrypt your two factors, and now they're all going to work. And I didn't have to do the scan of the QR codes again or anything like that. So that's why I use Authy. There are other systems. I like Duo Security, too. That's another one that will do something similar. I can go on and on. There are lots of ways to do that. Microsoft has its own authenticator now. But again, you kind of want to use something independent from your password manager. You want to put your stuff in two different places, because the whole point of this is to make it harder for hackers. See, if you put it all in LastPass and they somehow, and I don't think LastPass is hackable, honestly, I don't think this is a risk. But why not? If you're using two-factor, why not use two different systems? Then they would have to get into both. That's all. It's just practically speaking. Tom, South Carolina is next. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
Oh, Tom. I've got a question. You know, everybody wants to have been dropping their landline.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot of calls you don't, you know, want. And
no.
So I did that.
Good.
I was able to keep my number, and I transferred it to a track phone. All right. The whole idea behind this was about Google Voice. Google Voice would allow me to then transfer that landline to Google Voice, and then I can use
right.
all of the everything that they'll do for me.
Right.
But now Google Voice tells me that they cannot accept the porting of my phone number.
Really?
And
do they say why?
Well, it's hard to.
It understand. Must have something to do with the people who own that phone number. For some reason, Google Voice can't use it. What I do is I use Google Voice to create a new number. And that is the number now I give out to everybody. And here's why. You don't want the number to be, I mean, porting is easy. Then you don't have to give a new number out. But you want that number to be the Google Voice number. And I put it on my business cards. I give it to everybody because Google Voice allows me to screen callers I don't know and all that stuff. So I don't have to worry about it getting out. And then because I always get, as I mentioned, new phones, I can just say to Google Voice, ring this phone when somebody calls that number. So I just take advantage of this and get a new number and just have Google Voice forward to your old number. That way you haven't lost anything. And your old number still works, by the way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I guess Google Voice doesn't work with track phones. Yeah, I mean, the number portability thing is an FCC requirement, but there probably are limitations. Let's see here what the limitation. Use your current phone number in Google Voice. $20 fee. Corporate landline, internet, VoIP, and some other numbers can't be transferred, right? Oh, landline cannot be transferred. Oh, that's interesting. Don't cancel your phone plan before you start the transfer. So really, it's just for transferring cell phones, it sounds like. Okay. So you have to use you can only do a mobile number. So my suggestion, if you want to use a landline or some other line that you can't port over, is just you're going to use a new number and just start giving that number out. But that's kind of an advantage because I keep my numbers. In fact, I've had the same cell phone number for many years. Some people know it and call it, so that number is still good. And but I don't give it out because I don't want anybody to know how to get my actual physical phone. I give out, and it's on my business cards, my Google Voice number. And then that way I can use Google Voice's sophisticated screening capabilities to keep people off of. So the only people I ever get calls from on my real number are friends, family, and spammers. And I can immediately identify spammers, by the way, because they're not. There's nobody. Nobody should know that number. I know who should know this number, so I don't have to. It's really a great solution, actually. So in a way, I think it's good to keep your old number. And also that way, if Google Voice, this is another one. Somebody's saying, and I think you're exactly right. If Google Voice goes away. And they have your real number, that's a bad thing. I don't know what's, you know, I presume you'd be able to port out of it, but Now, the only negative on this is I do have a Google Fi phone, and the Google Fi took over my Google Voice number. So that's the actual number of my Google Fi Pixel 2. Not such a problem, really. So I have my you can have up to 5 phone numbers attached to your Google Voice number, and that's not including your Fi phone. So my Google Voice number rings my Fi phone, and then it rings the Samsung Galaxy S9, and it rings the iPhone 10. Those are the 3 phones I use all the time now. And as you noticed, the S9 is brand new. I just got it on Wednesday. So that was a different phone. It used to ring the Note 8. No longer rings the Note 8. Now rings the S9. Landline or corporate mobile numbers, yeah. So it's just limited in what you can do with it. That makes sense. Well, hey, how are you today? I'm here, yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. We got some suggestions from the chat room on the PDF printing problem, the PPP. Irvine Robb says, take a look at Corel Word Perfect PDF Fusion. Okay. Yeah, that might be. Yeah, it seems like maybe a simpler thing would be some sort of PDF automation, right? And then Lou MM, I love it, in the chat room, he says, all right, a serious question. How do I prevent static coming from my plastic chair mat? You know, you get those, right? The plastic mats to protect your carpet or your wood floor. Actually, you need it mostly for a wood floor. I destroyed a hardwood floor with an office chair rolling back and forth on it. He says, every time I touch my mouse or my monitor, or no, every time I touch my USB mouse, bam, my monitor flickers. And you probably go, ow, a little zap of static. So I'll tell you how we used to fix it. They do make commercial anti-static sprays you could spray it with. But we used to fix this on carpets by mixing a little bit of Downy fabric softener in with water. Because that's what Downy does. And any fabric softener has anti-static capabilities. Now, you've got to be careful on a plastic mat. If you spray it with that, it might make it very slippery. But I think that I get rid of it. Burke, who is the king of static electricity here in the studio, he knows, because you know he has to protect all of our gear. He says, just get a humidifier. It's because it's dry air, and a humidifier would fix it. All right, there's a couple of solutions for you, Lou MM. Kathy, Santa Ana, California, is our next caller at 8888 Ask Leo. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just rather computer non-savvy.
That's good. That's why you listen to this show, right?
I know, and I keep thinking it's all going to sink in, but now it's kind of like piano lessons. I just kind of know blocks.
I do think that's true, that people get blocks on a variety of things. I have a mental block on remembering people's names and faces. I just can't do it. So I understand. I think we all do. There's all some area, and it's good for people to remember when you meet somebody and you're computer savvy and you meet somebody who just says, I just can't understand it. And you go, but it's so easy. You want to yell at it. It's so easy. Just remember, you have a block in some other area. It isn't. It's just a block. It's some button that didn't get pushed or something. So what can I do to help you without trying to get rid of your block?
Okay. Well, I believe it was about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, that I bought a Dell Inspiron 15,
yeah,
5000 series.
Yeah.
And I purchased that at Costco specifically because, well, I bought it online, but I went to Costco first to check it out and make sure it had what I wanted.
Yeah.
Because I wanted the CD and the DVD player before they don't do that anymore.
Right. And they don't now. By the way, it's harder and harder to find those.
Right. So, anyways, that's why I did it. And I bought a limited Windows edition. I don't know. I don't understand it. But anyways, so now every time I turn on my computer, it says antivirus protection expired.
Yeah.
And the McAfee.
That's good. Uninstall that junk.
So I should just say no.
Yeah, just say no.
Okay. So,
and by the way, it may be hard to uninstall. A lot of times when you get, particularly happens with Windows PCs, when you get a Windows PC, the manufacturer, in this case Dell, has made deals that are basically advertising deals to put trialware software on your computer. And McAfee and Symantec and other companies will pay Dell $10, say, you know, put this on Kathy's computer, because in 6 months, you know, she'll have used up her free trial and we'll get money. We'll convert her to a customer. But you don't want McAfee. You don't want it. So you want to uninstall it, which means you're going to go in your control panel. There's a program and features entry, and you can uninstall it from there. Or you can even right-click on the icon in your start menu and select uninstall from the pop-up menu and get rid of it. The problem with antiviruses is sometimes they don't fully uninstall. They're trying to keep bad guys from uninstalling them. So you may have to go to the McAfee site and get an uninstaller there. And this is one of the reasons I hate antivirus software. I do not recommend it. You have Windows 10 on your machine. That has its own built-in antivirus.
Okay, and I upgraded it, but I've never actually used it. Isn't that horrible?
Well, you don't use an antivirus. It just sits there in the background watching.
But I've never even used the Windows.
Oh, you never used the computer?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That block really, really knocked you out.
I know. So,
is that your husband laughing in the background?
It is, and he won't even learn how to use his smartphone.
Well, there you go. That's good. So, blocks of a feather should stick together.
Anyway, so I don't even know how to turn the Windows features on.
Well, so that's software that was installed on Windows, which you don't need.
Right.
So, and it's bugging you because it wants you to give them, McAfee wants you to give them money. Don't. It's not worth it. No.
Okay.
You don't need it. And if you especially don't need it, if you don't even use the thing.
Right.
You can't get a virus if you don't use it. That's the safest way to use a computer, to leave it turned off.
Okay. So, well, no, I want to use it, but I just, too many things have happened in my life. So.
Yeah, that's fine.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, under my map, when I look at it, it says Microsoft Office 16.
Yeah, that's also a trial. That's also a trial. That run ran out too, I bet you.
Okay. So how do I even, just like if I wanted to use Office and...
Well, you can try it, but I think it'll pop up and say your trial has expired. After a year, I think it expires.
Okay, so then...
And then you buy it, and the best way to buy it is with a monthly subscription. You can get Office Home for about $8 a month, which is a lot cheaper than buying it. And it doesn't have the full Office, but you want Word and maybe Excel, the spreadsheet, but Word's probably all you'll ever use, so that's fine.
Okay. And you buy it over the
it'll be in there. It'll say, "Well, your trial's expired. Would you like to buy it?" And you're going to be buying it from Microsoft. That's who makes Office. Office is another matter. That's a productivity tool that you probably will use. There are free versions of Office. And frankly, if you're not writing, you know, novels or theses or something pretty elaborate, you might just use the built-in Notepad or Windows Write. I can't remember what they call it nowadays. But you might just use the built-in software that costs nothing, and you won't even need Office. So that's kind of up to you whether you want to pay for Office or not.
Okay. So is there like...
WordPad. That's the program. WordPad's built in. And that actually, for most people, is all you'll ever need.
Okay.
That's free.
Then is there like a site I can go to learn how to use?
Yeah, of course. There's, you know, it depends how you like to learn. There's books. There's very good books in the, you go down to the bookstore and, Windows 10, The Missing Manual, or the Windows 10 Field Guide by my friend Paul Thurrott. You should look through the books. Each book has a different kind of a pedagogic model, a way of teaching, and find one that fits right for you. You know, that you do you want just the facts, man, or do you want some explanation? You want lots of pictures? Just look at those. You can go online. There's some good sites, but the online sites tend to be piecemeal. I'm not sure I'd recommend them. You might even look at your local community college. Almost all of them offer classes for, you know, people who aren't students anymore, extension courses, things like that, mostly inexpensive or free, on using computers. Pick one that's, you know, you could have on how to use Microsoft Office. You might want to start with how to use a computer, period, or how to use Windows. So if you like somebody to teach you and you like to talk to somebody, ask questions, that's a good way to do it. Everybody has a different style. I think, though, you might just pick up a book. Frankly, you'll learn more just by using it. That's the trick, is to get over that little bump, that hump, that resistance, that block. And the only way to do it is just by doing it. There is built-in help and training for Word and all the Office programs. If you just look at the help menu in the program, that'll give you some information. There's a lot of choices out there, and you know, you're not alone. I mean, the truth is everybody struggles when they first try to use this. I mean, you may not have a block. It just may be you don't have, no, you know, you mentioned piano. You can't just sit down at a piano and play a sonata. You have to learn. And maybe after you try it, you might say, oh, you know, I don't have a block. This isn't that hard. I just thought it was. Have fun. Good luck. And keep listening to the show. It'll start to sink in. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, comment, a suggestion. You want to help Kathy learn how to use her system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out. A little teeny-weeny break. Pause to catch our breath, and we shall return with more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. David in Hollywood. Hello, David. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you? Walk, don't run to the phone. What can I do for you, David?
Oh, okay.
You're on. All you're right. On. David, you're on. Oh, yeah, you're going to ask a question near and dear to my heart. Are you a sound audio producer?
No, actually, I'm an actor and director, and nice. I got into filmmaking, and I produce and direct and act in some of my projects.
How cool!
And I went to this particular group. It's a user group, post-production group in L.A. It's called LAPPG, headed by really cool people. And there I won one particular program for audio restoration and repair software.
You won it?
It's called Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it's a little perk. When you join that group. By the way, I mean, these people are really, really, really great.
Let's give them a plug. What is the name of the group again? Let's give them a little plug.
Yeah, the Los Angeles Post Production Group.
Okay.
And the founders are Woody and Wendy Woodhall.
Hi, great Woodhalls.
People. Great
it's
people.
LAPPG.com. Yep. Nice.
Yep.
And so it's kind of like a user group for people in the film business.
Exactly.
Nice.
So I want this plug. But I need to upgrade to a much better audio rescue plugs that they have. And
so you won RX6. Is that what you got from iZotope?
Five is standard.
Got it.
Yeah. And, of course, there's a bunch of other plugins that are much more expensive.
Yeah. You can really add up the plugins. They really can add up.
Yeah. You're looking at, you know, 3,000.
Yeah.
or in between. I can upgrade, of course. But my question for you is, do you know of another audio product that does really good audio restoration and repair? Just, you know, as a competitor to iZotope.
iZotope is the industry standard. It's really, really good. iZotope. But there are a lot of plugins, including many free plugins. I think you'll find as you use the free plugins, they don't work as well. You start with some audio program, or we call them DAWs, digital audio work stations. Well, I'm not sure what the W stands for. Work something. A DAW is like Adobe Audition or Pro Tools is the kind of the base unit. And then these DAWs support plugins. And there are a couple of different plugin standards. VST might be the most common, virtual studio technology. And their software, like iZotope's stuff, that you put in a folder and then your DAW, when you launch it, goes, you have some nice plugins for things like audio restoration. But you'll see if you... There are literally thousands of VST plugins. If you Google VST plugins, you'll find many, many free ones. Now, the problem with that is you're going to have to try and see if they work. I've used a variety of them. In fact, one bad habit we people who work with audio get into is collecting plugins. And pretty soon, you got your menu in Adobe Audition has 400 entries, and you can go completely crazy. Somebody in the chat room saying, "What about Sound Soap?" And that was a really great program from Bias, but I think they might have. Oh, they sold it. Good. Okay, because I think Bias went out of business, but Sound Soap is now sold by Antares. And this is another very well-known, I've used this many times, very well-known plug-in for eliminating things like air conditioning sounds, traffic noises in the background to clean up your audio. I know a lot about this because in podcasting, you often have very poor audio, and I've spent a lot of time trying to clean up bad Skype and so forth. The nice thing about Sound Soap, it's only $75, and as with all of these plug-ins, they have a trial version. So that would be my strong suggestion. Get the trial version first. Use it with your DAW. See if it does what you want. Take a look. If you Google free VST plugins, you'll see a whole lot more. But it's been my experience that if it's really a good plugin, it usually costs money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I love the online word, and I should have recommended that to her. But I think that that might have been a little more complicated than she was ready for, to be honest. I think WordPad actually was the right answer. My daughter uses a Chromebook, and she can use online versions of Microsoft and Apple word processing programs, which is great. And I think they're pretty good. Pretty good. We were in the Brick House was the old Bias. The reason I know about Bias is the Brick House was the old Bias offices. And they moved out because they overbuilt and it cost them too much. And they kind of walked away from their lease. That place was vacant for some time. And I used to peer in. The window and say, boy, that's a cool space. They ceased operations in June 2012. Remember they made Peak, which was a really nice thing, Peak Studio. And it looks like a company called Soundness has taken over Sound Soap. So this was somewhat of a loss to the industry. Bias was a great little company. Yeah, there it is, Sound Soap. Antares. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here's to you, all you geeks. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Robert is on the line from La Crescenta, California. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how you doing, Leo? I've been listening to you for years.
Thank you. It's great to have you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, I got a kind of a funny problem. I just finished building a Gigabyte The motherboard is AB350M-D3H. And I recently purchased a header. It's a media dashboard, and it fits in the 5 1/4 slot. It has a USB 3.0 option, and the connector doesn't connect to the USB 3.0 header on the board. It's a PCIe connector.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I have is, it says, it's on the book, it says PCIe X4, and it has a little slot in it, just like it would be for a display card.
Yep.
When I attach it to that and I download and I, you know, install the software, it doesn't see it at all.
Yeah. So the 4 is the number of lanes. That's a PCI Express bus. So here's the idea, and this is why I tell people don't build your own computer, because it's so much fun when nothing works and there's no one to call. So you got a nice gigabyte motherboard. That's a nice one. And it has USB 3 on it, but it's got its own USB 3 chip on the motherboard. You've purchased this separate USB 3 media card. It goes in the PCI Express slot. It doesn't want to use the USB chip on the motherboard. It has its own USB chip, but it also needs fast throughput because USB 3 is really, really fast, right? So that's why it wants to attach to a PCI Express slot. The PCI Express slot can be 4 lanes, it can be 8 lanes, it can be 16 lanes. 4 is not unusual. I'm sure you have at least a 4-lane slot on that gigabyte motherboard.
So on the book itself, it says PCIe X4.
Yeah, that's what the X4 is, 4 lanes. So look on your gigabyte motherboard, make sure that slot you're putting it in, that PCI Express slot, you probably only have one. Generally, they're used for video cards. Most, you know, until recently, nothing was needed that much speed. But now we've got Thunderbolt 3 and USB 3.1, and we got lots of high-throughput devices on here. So whoever made this card decided they wanted to, you know, get the fastest connection to the data bus. They wanted to do it via PCI Express.
Yeah.
So as long as you're in the right slot and it's connected properly, you've done all the stuff, the hardware stuff you need to do. Who makes the audio header?
Oh, it's a Chinese company. They don't have a... You know, they're not a real company.
Yeah. So the documentation at best is poorly written English. Yeah, I mean,
I'm
using
Windows 10 Pro.
Yeah.
I wrote them a letter asking them for an update on the software, and they said that it's supposed to work on Windows 10.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck at this point. There's nothing I can do to fix that. I don't know why it doesn't work. As long as your connections are correct and you're in the right slot and it's a 4-lane slot, which I'm sure it is. If the software provided by the no-name Chinese manufacturer doesn't work, and Windows doesn't, it's really more Microsoft doesn't work, right? The Windows doesn't recognize it and plug and play it.
Right.
Yeah. The Chinese company may give you one of those little mini CDs or something of drivers. Never, ever use those. Who knows what that is? Check the motherboard manual. Make sure that PCI Express slot is enabled, that it's 4-channel. The Gigabyte manual will be your best help there. And, yeah, in theory, Microsoft Windows will say, oh, yeah, I see you have attached a new USB controller hub. You could look in your device manager and see if I wouldn't be surprised if in the device manager under the USB you see a new USB hub, but it's got an X on it, or it's somehow indicated that their hardware is there but our software is not, and that means you need to find the right driver. And who knows, I mean, this is why you don't buy this stuff. And this is really the reason people say, oh, no, it's so much fun to build your own computer. It's fun. It is fun. And nowadays, it's almost just like building a Lego model. It's not hard. Stuff snaps together. Except when this happens. And then, no, see, if you had a Dell computer and your USB port wasn't working, you called Dell. But here, who are you going to call? You call Microsoft? You call Gigabyte, the motherboard manufacturer? No, you call this Chinese company that you don't even know the name of in China and say, it's not working. Good luck. Good luck. Who even knows, you know, whether this thing works? Let's assume it works. Let's assume it's all correct. Maybe you need to go into BIOS. Burke's suggesting. Maybe you need to go in BIOS and disable the onboard USB because now you have a super duper PCI Express X4 USB. Maybe that's it. So what you're going to have to troubleshoot this now. And boy, I don't envy you. You're going to have to troubleshoot this and say, well, all right. Is it seeing it in the device manager? You know, does it see the hardware at all? If it doesn't, then I would go into the BIOS setup. I still call it BIOS. It's not BIOS anymore. Go in the EFI setup and look at the USB channel. See if it sees it there. Maybe disable the built-in onboard USB. Maybe you can't have both. Who knows? I mean, there's so many things. This is the problem. Now, this is the joy, by the way, as well as the pain of doing it yourself. If you solve this, you'll have learned some valuable information about how stuff works. Somebody, Lou MM, in the chat room saying, look at the controller chip on this media board. Maybe you can learn something there. Maybe the folks who made the controller chip have software drivers there. That's a good point. Maybe you need a new, maybe that media board's broken. Good news is you probably didn't spend more than $50 for it. You could probably get a new one. This is just the problem with building your own stuff. I'm sorry to say, is all the support now is on your shoulder. You can't call me. Kip in Crested Butte, Colorado. Hello, Kip.
Kip.
Hi, Kip. Is it hey, Crest? Do you guys say Butte or Butt?
Crested Butte.
Butte. I thought so.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm one of those that's been watching since the tech TV days.
Thanks,
and,
Kip. Thank you.
They had a Nielsen rating for my computer. The Twit Network would be pegged.
I like that. I like that.
My question is, I took your advice and bought a beautiful Dell XPS 15 last April.
Okay.
And I tell you, the screen is just gorgeous. It's, what, OLED?
Yeah, I really like those XPSs. Screen. There's no bezel. It's just beautiful. They really did a nice job with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I go to my Acer Chromebook, and it's like, oh, yeah. Not nearly as good.
Yeah.
But my question is, just recently, I've had a burnout pixel on it. And
Right? I hate that.
It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
So my question was, before I spend half a day with Dell and get a no, is this something that would be covered under warranty? Is it worth
it? It really depends. It really depends. Any direct address screen can have a bad pixel or two. And different companies have different rules for whether they'll replace it. Sometimes one isn't enough. Sometimes they'll say, well, you need three or more and they have to be connected. I mean, that's really up to the company about what their warranty rules are. There's no industry standard for this. One pixel is annoying. I know it's stuck. It's always black or always white. It's very annoying, especially in that beautiful screen. But all you can do is call Dell, rattle some cages, and hope they'll replace it. It's still under warranty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Usually a single pixel is not enough to get it fixed. But, you know, I would bet that Dell has some, you know, the rep has some leeway, as they do, you know, in many cases, and can, you know, choose what to do. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our sponsor for the show. We got to give a little props to the folks who make our shows possible, paying the bills for the power and the lights and all that. And, you know, who's really been a great sponsor for more than a year now, Quicken Loans. And I have to say, I'm going to take a little credit, because when Quicken Loans started advertising on Twit, they were the number two lender in the nation in terms of total number of loans written. They're now number one. Okay, maybe it wasn't me. Maybe it has something to do with this Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, always number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running, according to J.D. Power. People love Quicken Loans. And if you're a geek, there is reason to love Quicken Loans even more. They have created the first completely online mortgage approval process. No more going to the bank. No more putting on a tie or a nice dress. No more filling out the 20-page form and then having to go back and go through the attic and find your pay stubs from 1929. And you know, and believe me, I have been burned. We got a loan when we bought our house. Lisa and I bought our house 4 years ago from a big bank. They were at the time the number one lender. No more. And I know why. And it just went on for weeks, months. We went on vacation. We almost lost the house because they kept coming back and saying, we need more information. We need more information. Quicken Loans, you do the whole thing. You could so fast, you could do it on your phone at an open house right now. Just go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Answer a few simple questions. No 20-page application. You pick the rate, the term, the down payment. They have partnerships with all the financial institutions, so as soon as you give them permission, they can get the information they need. You don't have to go to the attic. They crunch the numbers, then based on income, assets, and credit, they'll analyze all the home loan options which you qualify for, and they'll find the one that's just right for you. And all of this under 8 minutes. 8 minutes! It took us 8 weeks! Eight minutes! Rocket Mortgage. I don't know why they're Quicken Loans should not only be the number one, they should be the only mortgage lender. I mean, these guys are great. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Quicken Loans, the best. And Rocket Mortgage, the fastest. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Maria, La Crescenta, California. Hello, Maria.
It's Marla.
Oh, I'm sorry. Marla. Okay. I saw the L and I said I. Marla.
Everybody does that.
I apologize. Well, it's very tiny print and I am old, so I'm doing the best.
I am too.
Isn't it sad that all the restaurants, they've turned the lights down and made the menu print so small?
Isn't that weird?
It used to be so much better in the old days.
I know it.
What can I do for you, Marla?
Well, my question is, do you know which Obama phone has the best reception?
Ooh, I do
and I
not.
I can tell you why I'm asking this.
Yeah.
You need to know, but that's my question.
Do they call them Trump phones now?
No, I doubt it.
So these are the inexpensive phones that are subsidized by the government. And the idea is nowadays everybody needs a smartphone or a cell phone, I should say. Generally, they're not smartphones. One of the things that's it's sad, reviewers no longer test reception. It's just it's mostly because it's too hard to do it reliably. It really depends. You know, you'd need, first of all, very fancy equipment, and then you'd need a special room that would isolate the room from all the outside cell reception. So you'd have to have a special anechoic chamber that blocked all, you know, with a Faraday cage around it, that blocked all of the outside radiation. Then you'd need a little base station that you put in this unit that broadcasts cell signal with a known strength, and then you'd need a special device on the phone, or the phone would have to have software in it that would tell you exactly what it was seeing, and then you'd have to move it around. The only people I know of that do this is the FCC. I remember going to see the FCC. They have testing labs where partly they're testing for that the radiation from the phone is within government acceptable limits, and they do all sorts of stuff like this. But this, I don't know anymore. I guess there were some places that used to do this. PC Mag used to have a specially built lab to do this kind of thing. Are you having problems with reception?
I've been with Verizon for 15 years, and I'm on my second flip phone.
Yeah.
And the poor thing, I think the battery's about to go.
And you want a new one?
Well, here's the problem. They want me to pay about $100 a month, and I'm on Social Security now.
That's not an Obama phone. That's a regular phone.
No, that's what Verizon wants.
That's crazy. I don't even pay that for my iPhone 10 is $80 a month on T-Mobile. What are they, nuts?
Well, it's Verizon, and I've had many fights with them, and I'm just done.
Yeah.
So because I'm up next to the mountains, up in the foothills of L.A., reception's so, not that great.
You're not getting.
I had a problem with Verizon.
So have you asked Verizon for Lifeline cell phone service? Because it should not be. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to be getting is when you use the government subsidized phone, you want the government subsidized cell service.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is what I don't know. I'm not a tech person.
Yeah, well, tell them.
All I want is for this thing to work in the house.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah. So that's not really on the phone. Almost any phone. You know, the phones are pretty similar now. Okay. It's really going to be on where you are relative to the Verizon cell site. Does your phone work in your house now?
Yeah, I'm on it right now.
Okay. So I would guess that any phone you'd get would work just as well. I don't think that's the issue. It's where the cell site is. Now, call Verizon and say, look, I'm using an Obama phone. I want Lifeline service, not a $100 a month service.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. Thank you.
So. Yeah. That's because that's the government program for because it's subsidized. You're on Social Security. That's the whole point is that they subsidize the phone and then they also need to subsidize the cell service.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Ask them what it is. And if Verizon's working where you are with your phone, it will work with any new phone that you get.
Because when I lived downtown LA, people had different, phone companies they were dealing with. And I was the only one that didn't have to leave the building, go out on the corner to use it.
Generally speaking, especially in La Crescenta, I think Verizon is the right choice. This all depends on coverage. So the way it works is there's a cell tower, and you have to be close enough to the cell tower. And the closer you are, the more bars you get on that phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how many bars are you getting in your house?
It varies. It depends where I am.
Yeah.
But I can get anywhere from... 2 to 5.
Perfect. So 5 means it's 100%. And that's probably when you're closer to the window or, you're somewhere that you're kind of line of sight to the cell tower. But what it means is you're close enough to a cell tower. There's everybody's got somewhere they can go in their house or their office where they don't get cell reception because walls, especially with walls with metal in them, will block it. I mean, there's lots of – it's a radio signal, and it's not as good as the radio signal you're listening to. It's a higher frequency, and so it bounces off of things more. So you have – so that's just the way it is. But if you can get 5 bars where you are in some parts of your apartment, then that's good enough. You're not going to get – no phone's going to do better than that.
Right.
So any phone you get should be fine. And then just – don't, ask them, say, hey, this is an Obama phone. I'm on Social Security. What's your Lifeline cost? Because I don't want to, $100 a month is their full freight, you get everything cost.
Yeah, because I've gone to Target, and they have a whole aisle of phones with all the brochures.
Yeah.
And the whole thing gives me a headache.
So I don't blame you. Somewhere in the brochure, it tells you get Lifeline service to match your phone cost. And that's,
and I really don't want to get a phone from them because I don't feel like they're the expert. I don't know.
I know they are. Oh, well, they're always trying to sell you, upsell you. That's their job, right?
There
are other services that use the Verizon network. So that might be, if Verizon won't offer you, I'm sure they will. I think they're required to. But if they won't offer you low-cost service, oh, yeah, they do. They have Lifeline service. It's on. I'll put the link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Thank you, ScooterX. VerizonWireless.com/solutions/services/Lifeline. So they have it. So just say, I want Lifeline service.
Oh, perfect. Okay, well, that helps a lot.
Yeah, it's you have to be qualified, of course, and I think you are because you got the Obama phone. And it may not be the cheapest deal ever. I mean, this is Verizon. You've got the champagne.
I know.
The champagne.
That's what I'm afraid of. I'm
carrier.
Them.
Yeah, on beer budget. But there are other companies. Susie Q in our chat room says Page Plus Cellular is a service on top of Verizon and costs a lot less. So they'll give you the same reception Verizon does. Now, one thing you want to make sure you're not paying for data because your phone doesn't do data, right? It's just a phone.
No, I can do email.
Oh, you have a smartphone. Okay.
No, it's a little flip phone.
It's smart-ish. Okay.
It's a, they call it LG3, whatever that means.
Yeah. So it's a, what we call a feature phone. So you
it's
don't.
A baby phone.
Yeah, you may not need a high-end data service either. I think you should.
You know, I don't even care about seeing videos. I just want to be able to get online and read my, you know, news sites and stuff.
Talk to Verizon. They'll be a nice customer service rep on the other end. And you just be nice, and they'll be nice. And just, you know, talk in a little old lady voice. You know, like the one with the canary. Say, hello, I'm calling about Lifeline Service.
Yeah.
You sound like a nice boy. And maybe they'll.
Thank you so much.
You don't sound like that at all. You see, that's the problem. You need to.
I know.
You need to sound like this. And then they'll say, oh.
Be an actor.
Yeah, be an actor. You're in Hollywood. Be an actor.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you, Marla. Thanks for calling.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Yeah, you shouldn't. Yeah, if you have a subsidized phone, you should get subsidized phone service, and it should not be $100 a month. I don't even pay that, and I have the top of the line T-Mobile service.
Hello, Sonny.
I think that might work. 8888 Ask Leo. What are you going to do? They'll take you for a ride if they can. You know, they really will. But I think you get the nice thing about people in customer service, sometimes, most of the time, they take that title seriously, customer service rep, and they want to serve you. So give them an occasion to serve you. Don't be mean. Don't be angry. Don't be upset. Help me, please. I need. And see if they're more helpful. 8888 Ask Leo is the website. We do have the phone number. We do have a great website. It's techguylabs.com. If you go there, everything I talk about is there. It's free, no sign-up required. So it's a great place to get the links and the resources. And not just the ones I mentioned, but the ones that Scooter X and others in the chat room pass along, including lots of information about Lifeline. Techguylabs.com. Yeah, I like Ting. We have Ting for my father-in-law. We give him our hand-me-down, iPhone, and then Lisa's old iPhone, and then we get Ting service on it. And that's very inexpensive. I think I don't pay more than $25 a month for him. And he is. It's a full, smartphone. He's got an iPhone on there. Really like Ting. Ting was a sponsor for a long time. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That is my phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. If you want to call and ask a question or make a comment, make a suggestion, 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com, and that's free. There's no charge. There's no sign up, but we put that there so you don't have to write down anything as you listen to the show, because I know you're driving and you're shopping, you're doing stuff, and you don't want to have to do that. So just listen, enjoy, and then if you need something that you heard on the show, every show has a page up on that website. Every show, 1,472 shows, each of them divided into a day, hour, segment, so you can drill right down. You can even leave comments if you want. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is on the line from Simi Valley. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. The question I have is, I have Windows 7, and every time I get an update from Microsoft, something goes wrong after that.
Every time.
Yeah, every time.
Jeez.
Something different, but what
that's
I want to know
that's
is
that's annoying.
Is there a way to stop the restore point from being erased when they do updates?
It's erasing. Oh, you probably have so many you don't have enough room for them, because it makes every time you do an update, it makes a new restore point.
Yeah, but it erases my old one.
It erases the old one.
Well, is there a way to keep the old ones?
That doesn't seem right. That's a good question.
And when they do a restore point, is that before they did the update or after?
It's before. That's the whole point, is if it didn't work, you can roll it back.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. I think you just don't have enough room. That's probably why it's deleting them.
I don't have, you know, I only have one in there, and it deletes.
Yeah, how much space do you have on your hard drive? That must be it.
Oh, many gigabits.
Really? You've got plenty left.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
I'm looking to see, and all the entries I see are, oh, here we go. Why are my system restore points? You don't have any cleanup applications on there.
I do not.
No, because sometimes those can delete those. They do take space. You do take space, and I have a feeling, you know, and in theory, the oldest restore point will get deleted as space is needed. If you've got tons of space, many, many gigabytes of space.
I do.
Then that wouldn't explain it. I'm not sure why they're getting deleted. In theory, the idea is we're going to create a restore point before we install a program, before we do big updates, that kind of thing. That all happens automatically. And then if you decided, I don't like this update, you'd be able to, in theory, restore. I never use restore points. I don't trust them. But it is a very handy thing to have if an update or an install goes bad. I'm not sure what's going on. How much, literally how much storage is left on there when you say many, many? Hundreds? How much? 20?
20 gigabit.
20 gigabytes out of a terabyte drive, a half?
No, it's 500, half.
Half. 20 is pretty low, actually. I bet you that's why it's deleting it. See if you can free up some space on that drive. Now, I'm more concerned, frankly, about the fact that every time you install an update, it breaks something. That's not supposed to happen. And it is not a normal experience. It's not my experience at all. I haven't had an update break anything in years. So I am guessing that this would be a really good time to start over. And I think Windows, you probably should do this every year or so. And by start over, I mean get you know, you have on almost all machines, you have a hidden partition with the Windows installer in it. So you can do this without getting the install disks or a serial number. Windows 7's already been activated on there. If you have Windows 10, it's even easier. Once any machine's running Windows 10 and it's authorized, you don't have to ever worry about it again. If you hit the Windows key and you type reset, you'll see that you can reset your PC. And you have two choices, reset it without deleting your data or reset it and starting over. And I honestly believe that resetting it and starting over, what we call a clean install of your current operating system, is a very good idea every few years. And I have a feeling if you did that, you wouldn't have problems with Windows updates ever again. You'd also notice you've got a lot more space. A half terabyte drive's huge. You should have plenty of space. Getting down to 20 gigabytes, I think that's exactly why the Windows restore points, because they can take many gigabytes themselves. I think that's exactly why they restore, especially for a operating system upgrade. So I'm guessing that's why you're running out of, you know, they're deleting them. So take a look at doing a clean install. Now, the one problem, of course, is you're going to want to make sure you're going to be erasing the drive. So you're going to want to make sure you back up all your data. And if you have programs that you need to reinstall, and I'm sure you do, make sure you have what you need to do that. Some older programs are still on disk, so make sure you have those disks. Almost certainly you want to make sure you have the serial numbers. Nowadays, almost everything you buy, you just re-download. And if it's from the Windows Store, you don't even have to have the serial number. It just knows, oh, yeah, he owns those. We'll just re-download all of those. One good reason to buy stuff whenever possible from the Windows Store as opposed to just downloading it from a website. But there will be, I'm sure, a few programs that you have to reinstall. And so make sure you have the serial numbers for those. This is an opportunity, by the way, to save space on your drive and to make your system more robust and more secure. Not install everything, but only those things you know you're going to need right now. We've talked about this before. It's my new mantra. Don't install more than you need. Every program you install not only takes up space, but opens security flaws on your system. So let's take this as an opportunity to, A, create a nice fresh install of Windows. And I think just doing that alone will mean you don't have problems with future updates. And B, reinstall applications that you have to have, but not the ones you don't have to have. Don't install those until you need them. And I bet you there's a lot of applications you have on there that you haven't used in ages. So just let's not install them. 20 gigs is, believe it or not, and you know, if you've been computing for any length of time, this is hard to believe. It's not a lot. I remember my first 2 gigabyte hard drive. I thought, wow, I'll never run out of space. So 20, I mean, that's, but no, in fact, just because of the way things are these days, restore points can be big. It's probably deleting the old restore point because it doesn't want to use up all your disk space. That's, I would guess, why it's deleting those. 8888, ask Leo if you think you know better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take a little time out here and come back. More of your calls still to come as we continue to talk high tech. 8888, ask Leo. Peter on the line from San Gabriel, California. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing this fine afternoon?
Ah, Faith and Begara, I'm just fine. Survived St. Patrick's Day, I did.
Yes. I have an EcoTank ET2550.
Just talking about that.
And my problem is I went to print out a Jiffy Lube coupon thing.
Yeah.
And it came out with lines across the,
yeah,
you know, clear lines, and it was like it never completed.
So this is not uncommon with inkjet printers if you don't use them every day. The ink starts to dry on the print head, and you'll get lines. Now, all printers, including these Epsons, have in the, you know, interface, the setup interface. Nice thing about the Epsons, they've got a fairly large LCD panel, so you can do this right on there. If you can't on the printer, your printer, if you don't have that panel, you can do it usually in the software on the computer. But what you want to do is you want to do a couple of things. There's a couple of maintenance things. It's probably a good idea to do this on a regular basis anyway if you don't do a lot of printing. And that is to do a nozzle check. And what it'll do is it'll print a pattern, and it'll show if there are nozzles that are plugged up, you'll see exactly what you just described. You'll see a line where you should see color. There also may be alignment issues. Sometimes that happens as well, and you'll see those in the nozzle test. So you do that first, the nozzle check, and then there's a nozzle cleaning cycle that you can run. So it has different names depending on the printer, but I would say at least once a week. If you don't print at least several times a week, and a lot of times people don't, do that nozzle cleaning check. Now, the nozzle maintenance, the cleaning. The only downside of that is it does use a fair amount of ink. The good news is on the EcoTanks, and I should say they are a sponsor, obviously, but on the EcoTanks, you have a ton of ink, and ink isn't as expensive. So it's not really an issue so much on the EcoTanks. It might be, though, if you have one of those printers with very expensive cartridges. And that's probably, if that's the case, maybe an indication that inkjet isn't right for you. If you only print once in a while, a couple of times a month maybe, you probably should look at an inexpensive laser printer as opposed to inkjet printer. Inkjets really are designed for regular use. Laser printers, they don't care. And you may think, oh, I can't afford a laser printer. But no, they've gotten as inexpensive as inkjet. And in fact, they might even be less expensive because the upfront cost has gone down a lot, and the per-page cost is usually much lower than on an inkjet. So this might be an occasion to look at a laser. The only negative on the laser, they're not great for photo printing. They do have color lasers. Most of the time, black and white's fine. You're printing out coupons and stuff. Black and white's fine. Nobody cares if it's in color, in which case a literally $90 laser printer, probably just fine for you. And that never gets clogged, so you can print, you know, that's a good low-duty cycle printer. 8888, ask Leo. Some printers, I'm being told now by the chat room, will actually do a self-cleaning cycle automatically if you don't use them. But I don't think the Epsons do. So with your Epson, periodically, just a good idea just to clean the nozzles once a week. Let's go to Joe, Tampa, Florida. He's next. Hi, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you for taking my call,
my
Leo.
My pleasure.
Hey, I love your show, guy. I'm looking to get information on Arulu phones. Arulu, I guess, is a Chinese manufacturer.
I have never heard of them. How do you spell that?
I is in India, R is in Romeo, U is in United, L, U, I guess.
Arulu. And, huh. That sounds more African than Japanese. All right, yeah, I'm at their website. Huh.
Yeah. I'm looking at the GeoKing 3, and it's a phablet-type phone, 6.5-inch screen. A few people have reviewed it, and I just wanted to get your take on it.
So I have never seen these phones. I'm pretty careful I just review the big names. And I am always a little suspicious. You know, when you see a smartphone for $169, it always makes me worry. You know, it's the same thing as getting one of those tablets they sell at the gas stations for $49.95. It's always a little bit of a compromise. Anybody in the chat room ever try Arulu? This is new to me. I have never heard of these guys. And I've seen a lot of off-brand phones before. They have a $60 tablet. The Arulu GeoKing 3 Max smartphone. You know, the nice thing, most of these phones will be Android, right? Because, they'll all be Android. Because Android is a free operating system. Doesn't cost them anything to put it on a phone. It's one of the reasons. And truthfully, I think we do pay too much for phones these days. I think companies are really taking advantage of us. Even a $1,000 iPhone 10 probably only costs Apple half as much to make or less. So there's a nice hefty markup. That's why Apple's the most profitable company in the history of mankind. Close to $1 trillion in market value. Nobody's ever reached that. You don't get there by not having 100% markup on your phone. So it is true that somebody like Arulu could come along and say, well, look, it only costs us $50 to make this phone. Let's charge $160. We'll still make a ton of money. But I don't know anything about them. And here's the real concern with Android for me. Android has to be regularly updated, just like Windows, just like Mac OS. It has to be regularly updated. iPhones get updated automatically because Apple's very careful not to do deals with phone companies that get in the way of that. Android, not always the case. Manufacturer has to be responsive. The cell company has to be responsive. Google can put out a fix for Android, but that doesn't mean you're going to get it. And on Android phones, if you don't get patches, you are running in a dangerous environment. So I'm going to bet this Arulu phone probably doesn't have Android 8, probably has Android 6, might even have Android 7 on it. You know, might be pretty old, and it's not going to get the monthly security patches, I'm almost certain, in which case I can't recommend it. If you want an inexpensive Android phone, get a Moto G5 or G5 Plus. If you want a good Android phone, you'd be better off getting a Pixel or one of the Google phones or one of the Samsung phones. You're going to use this for a few years. Spend a little bit more. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, let me tell you a little bit about one of our sponsors for the Tech Guy podcast right now. You may have heard me talk about Fracture. Somebody just in the chat room said, you should print that picture of you in the green hat on a Fracture. I love my Fractures. These are beautiful prints. We keep some in the studio so I can show you what they look like. Because sometimes I think people, when I tell them about this, they go, oh, wait a minute. Now, come on. How good could that be? Fracture is a home decor company that takes your photos out of the shoebox and puts them on your wall, which I believe in. If you've got a great photo, you want to put it on your wall. But here's what Fracture does that's different, which I love. They print them on glass. And there's something about these glass prints. The colors pop. They're almost 3D. I do a lot of monochrome, too, the black and white, and they look great. There's a richness in the touch. Let me show you. This is the smallest. They range from 4.8 inches by 6.4 inches. So that's a good one. You can get a bunch of those and go up the stairs or something like that. That's the boys at Michael's 8th grade graduation. Isn't that cute? Lisa printed that out. Here's a little bit bigger one. This is a borderless one. If you have Facebook or Instagram pictures, square pictures, they have square prints. They also have 4x3. That's the borderless. Beautiful. And it comes, by the way, you know, it's carefully packed so that they come perfect in this insert with the screw, and then they're ready to hang, and there's no frame, so they really just float on your wall. They look so pretty. Here's a black and white. This is one I took of my son at his high school graduation dinner, and he was mad at me. I love this because I feel like it's like the Sinatra and Friends or something. Now, they can get very big. This is another one from the high school graduation. This is one I gave. By the way, they make great gifts to family and friends. Fracture.me. If you use the offer code TechGuy15, you'll get 15% off. They have a 60-day money-back guarantee. We're getting slowly bigger and bigger. Here's one I took in Peru on the train trip in Peru. Each fracture is handmade in Gainesville, Florida, from U.S.-sourced materials. They have a carbon-neutral factory. Really nice people, too. Bring a special memory to life. Give it as a unique gift. Decorate your home with the moments that tell your story. Don't let them kind of languish in the digital shoebox. Get them out in the walls. This is the biggest size they print, 21.6 by 28.8 inches. And so if you've got a hero shot, one you're really proud of, as I am of this one, they'll print that out. And, man, put that over the mantelpiece. Doesn't that look good? Wow. The colors, you practically feel like you're there. I love these. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15 to get 15% off your first order at Fracture.me. They're printed on glass. They're beautiful. And as I said, 60-day money-back happiness guarantee. So, you know, any problems at all, or even if you just don't like it. They also have, if you don't have a great photo of your own, they have beautiful travel photos and, you know, Mona Lisa and paintings and stuff that you can print as well. You know, it'd be great for a kid going off to college instead of those junky posters. Get them a fracture. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15. Very affordable, and they look great. Fracture.me. And don't forget to tell them, I heard it on the Tech Guy in that one question survey. It helps support the show. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15. We thank Fracture for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the calls we go. Karen Lake Elsinore, California. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very nice. And I have the same problem you do. Go ahead, tell us.
Do you really?
Yep.
My Roku, I go to watch something on any of my channels, and it says that I'm not connected to the internet. So then I go into the settings. And it says that I'm connected just fine.
I know. Me too. Me too. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a particular model of the Roku or a problem with their software. Here's what I think it is, because the same exact thing happens to me. And sometimes I'll be watching a movie and a thing will pop up, say, you're not online.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I go out of the movie.
Back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah. And I go to the network and it says, fine. And what I think it is, and I'm only guessing, is that I don't think the Roku handles network dropouts very well. So if the network goes down for a second, normal, any other device would just go, it would keep streaming. It would, you know, miss a beat, the buffer would shrink or whatever, but it wouldn't stop. But the Roku, I think, and maybe it's just some models. This is not on the Roku Ultra, which doesn't happen to me on the newest Roku, but it's the one before it. I don't know if that's the Roku 4 or 5, but I'm thinking it's a software issue with that Roku. And it only happens on that one Roku. Every other Roku is fine. So I don't know what the fix is. You could reset the Roku, you know, start all over from fresh. Maybe that'd fix it. It's one thing I haven't tried yet. Maybe it's just reassuring to know you're not alone. It's very annoying, though, isn't it?
It is very annoying.
Yeah, because you're trying to watch the show. And the funny thing is, you know, the internet's there. In fact, sometimes, this really annoys me, the show keeps playing underneath this announcement that the internet is gone. And I'm saying, Roku, you're playing the show. What are you, computers, what are you going to do, right?
Exactly.
So I think that just getting a new Roku would fix it, maybe a newer model. I don't think it happens to all of them. As I said, I have the Roku Ultra for my 4K in my office, and that doesn't happen. So it may be that it's that model, or it may be some of that model. You might call Roku. It's possible they'll replace it.
Okay.
I've seen it exactly the same thing, and I have tried and tried, and I have not found a fix for it.
So, well, good to know I'm not alone.
You're not alone. It doesn't happen on the same network with the Apple TV, with any of the other, and I have many streaming devices hooked up, and it just happens with this one Roku, and I think it's the, I'm not sure which Roku it is. I think it's the Roku 4. It's whatever the current one is. Now, somebody's saying in the chat room, I had a similar problem. I got a Roku Express. It doesn't happen with that. So it may just be, and these are only $35. It might be just getting a newer Roku or replacing the Roku would have it. However,
okay,
it wouldn't be a bad idea to try before you do all that, just resetting the Roku. Unplug everything, plug it all back in again. There may even be a reset command in the Roku menu, and then start over.
Okay.
Again. Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry that I can't help you. But maybe it makes you feel better to know it happens to me too. It drives me nuts. Could be the HDMI cable. Somebody's saying, no, it's not an HDMI issue because the screen continues just fine. It is an internet issue. And I'm pretty convinced that the Roku, at least this Roku, doesn't handle the intermittent dropouts of internet that happen. It happens all the time. Wi-Fi should happen less often on a wired Roku. So that's if you have the option to wire it in to a router directly via an Ethernet cable, that might be one way to fix it. I had the problem twice over because I had a router that was dropping the internet periodically. I know because I had to end up watching it, monitoring it, and I saw, oh, you're dropping the internet. What? Stop it. And so that caused it. So, but then it's happening on Wi-Fi too. Wi-Fi does periodically stop. That's just Wi-Fi. Then it might be related to that. Anyway, thank you. I'm sorry I couldn't be more help. Somebody knows, call me, 8888-ASK-LEO, or leave a comment on our website, techguylabs.com. On to the calls. Kevin in Malibu, California. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Petaluma.
Hello, Malibu.
Leo, welcome to the case of the St. Paddy's Day disappearing files, Windows 10 edition.
Worthy of a Perry Mason, I think.
That's you, brother.
What's happening? You've got files disappearing?
I'm sitting in front of my, Toshiba satellite running Windows 10 laptop.
Yeah.
And a whole folder's worth of files disappeared. Those files being pictures and music, movies, and even folders.
Yeah.
Now, I know enough to be dangerous, so I kind of, you know, did a major search and looked everywhere and did that. Nowhere to be found. And so, Leo, I'm not calling you to say, where are they, but why did this happen?
I don't know. It's not supposed to happen, obviously.
Is it me?
It could be you. I certainly would look, you know, it's easy to accidentally, without even knowing it, drag something into another folder. So I would do a, you know the folder name, the one that's missing? You know its name?
Oh, yeah.
Have you searched?
I know where you're going, and I checked all those.
You
I
did.
I checked every folder that was recently opened.
And use the search feature, because you can search for a folder by name, just like you can search for a file by name, and just see. Look in the trash can, because it's very easy, by the way, to accidentally hit the delete key, and boom, they're gone. You know, it also could be a bug. It could be a failing hard drive, and it might even be malware. It depends what it is. It's just hard for me from remote to tell what happened.
Well, this is the second time this has occurred. The first time, I thought it was me, just like you said. I thought I dragged it or deleted it, you know, by myself.
Yeah.
But then when it happened again yesterday, I said, wait a minute. And I will share, Leo, that fortunately I did back everything up.
Good.
So I didn't lose it.
Good man.
Yeah, peace of mind, right?
So, some malware will do this. So the first thing, of course, to type, you know, hit the Windows key, type command CMD, open a command line and type MS, let's see, Microsoft SFT, I think, the Microsoft scanner, and run that and look for malware. That's a good idea, or if you've got, you know, go to antivirus.com and scan it online and make sure you don't have malware. Hold on a second. Because that is a symptom of some malware. I hate to be that guy, though, because, you know, a lot of times you ask a tech for some, you know, something's going on, and they just default answer is, oh, you got a bug. So I don't know if that's it. You're not the first person to call with this issue. So it could be there is a problem that we don't know about in Windows, you know, but it's not very common. I'm looking on the Microsoft site, somebody complaining about this and disappearing files. Do you look, when you look in the recent files, do you see that file?
No, the full,
everything's
the folder
gone.
That it doesn't show up.
Yeah. Wow.
So you said MSFT?
What is the Microsoft Security Scanner? MFT. I can't remember. Let me do it. I think it's MRT now that I think of it. So CMD and then MRT. Nope. Oh, yeah, MRT. And it will then launch and say, do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device? Yes. And you'll get a window that you've never seen before because for some reason Microsoft doesn't put a icon in the start menu for this program. But it's the Microsoft Malicious Software Removal Tool, or MRT. And then do a thorough scan just to make sure. This happens every time you get a Windows update. It runs this in the background, but it doesn't run a full scan. It does a quick scan. So periodically, it's a good idea to run a full scan. It'll take a while and see if there's anything going on there. That doesn't, by the way, find everything, but it's certainly the first thing.
Good deal.
Yeah. It's odd. I just want to. We want to eliminate malware. It probably isn't, right. But we want to eliminate that.
I'm not the only one this is happening to.
No, I've gotten calls before.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I never did figure out what was happening. So I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe we can do that together. We will continue.
Let's
in the next
continue this
in the case of St. Paddy's Day.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye bye.
Have a great day. You disabled the malicious software removal tool. Why? Why I made that too? Why? Why? Antivirus.com, which is the Trend Micro online scan, will also probably do a more complete job of looking for malware on your system. I don't recommend installing any malware software. Anyway, in addition to what you already have with Windows Defender. But, no, he said Windows 10. But, you can always run these online virus scans, which will help, you know. So the Yeti is a different kind of microphone. So you have to always, when you have a microphone, you always want to read the manual. The Yeti is not a condenser microphone. So it's just where the condenser coil. And the Yeti, in their design, they put the condenser coil pointing this way. But you can see when I speak into the side of this, it doesn't work because this is a large coil dynamic microphone with the sensor, whatever, the receiver is pointing that way. So this is what we call an end address microphone. And the reason it's got openings on the side is because it has off-axis rejection. So sound coming in from this side actually cancels out any sound coming in from here that doesn't match. So these are great microphones for noisy environments, studios, stuff like that. They're not very sensitive, so they're not ideal for, you know, people use Yetis and microphones like that where they want every sound. But then you have to soundproof. I don't like the Yeti. Don't recommend it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My scan is still running. The window. I got to give you the right name for it, though. It's the Microsoft Windows Malicious Software Removal Tool, which really should, by all rights, be MSRT, right? But it's not. It's MRT. And the way you get to it is you hit the Windows key, type Command, CMD, to get a command prompt. You know, that black window with white text that is, you know, mysterious and incomprehensible, except to people who use DOS back in the day. That's actually what you're getting is a DOS prompt or something like it. And then once you see that greater than sign, you just type MRT and you hit return. What happens then is it launches a program that you have on your computer, but Microsoft hides from you. There's no icon in the start menu. You won't see it anywhere. It's hidden. Microsoft runs it a quick scan every time it does a Windows update once a month. But it's not a bad idea. It's a useful tool. It's not a bad idea to run it and do a full scan, which will take a while. Mine's, you know, probably a tenth of the way through. They say it's going to take, well, they don't say, but it's going to take probably an hour or two. Depends how big your hard drive is, how much you have on it. It won't find every bit of malicious software, not even close, but it finds the most common infections. Microsoft has started doing this a couple of years ago, I think. And every time you get a Windows update, you get updates for MRT, and it runs a quick scan. It's just a way of finding the most obvious, most common bugs. But I like doing that, and I prefer that to having an antivirus sitting on my system at all times. There's all sorts of problems that antiviruses cause. There, you can do a scan with a full-fledged antivirus. It might be more complete, but you can do that online at antivirus.com. That's the Trend Micro online site. ESET has an online scanner. In fact, you could even, you know, you're not supposed to install multiple antiviruses on a computer, but you can run multiple antivirus scans online. And so that's a very handy way to get a second or third opinion. You could just Google online virus scanners and you'll find, I think, three or four at least that are free and easily available. Antivirus.com is the one that leaps to mind. So if you are worried, running these scans is, it'll at least help your peace of mind. If you have mysteriously disappearing files, I'd do that. But, you know, it could also be a hard drive that's failing. Something's gone wrong with it, and it has errors. As a result, files are disappearing. Could be, you know, user error. Could be a lot of things. But it's the one that you want to worry about and you want to make sure eliminate right away is this idea that you might have malware on the system. Mike in Concord, California is next. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. I'm hoping you can answer a weird question for me.
All right, Mike.
I recently was in the Comcast store, and they told me that there was a 4K Comcast box available, so I got one.
Yep, the new X1.
Very well.
Yep.
The new X1. And my question is, because I had that and the new 4K DVD box or player and all that, I saw the Logitech Harmony universal remote.
Yeah.
For all the different devices.
Love those Harmonies.
So yeah. I got that, went home, and went to set it up. And I went through the procedure a couple of different times, thought I was doing it correctly, and it just wouldn't work. Well, finally, speaking to the tech support on each side on Comcast.
Uh-oh. I think his phone died. But I can tell you what's happening. There are two ways remote controls work. One is by invisible.
Either side.
Oh, there he is.
I have to fix that.
So, yeah, so there's two ways remote controls can work. One is with invisible infrared beams. And you'll know that your remote control is one of those because it'll have a clearish, reddish plastic panel at the end, and you have to aim it. You can't go out of the room and press a button. It won't work. It has to be line of sight to the device. The device will also have somewhere, most TVs, receivers, DVD players have somewhere a plastic panel on the front. That's the receiver. There are, though, much more sophisticated devices that use radio frequency. And the advantage of those is you don't have to be aiming at it. They go for a farther distance. You can even leave the room and it will work because RF works, you know, around corners. So the Comcast box apparently is an RF box. Is that what they're telling you?
Yes, and they told me that some of the older Comcast boxes will work either way, and that the Comcast remotes that come with the Comcast box actually send both signals because they will work with either.
Yeah,
side.
But they decided, I guess, with the X1 4K to go with RF only. So it depends on which Harmony remote you have. Some do RF, and then Harmony also sells an RF wireless extender. So that's, if you have an IR Harmony remote, then it won't work with that X1 box unless you go back to the Logitech site and buy the RF extender, which will receive the IR signal from the remote and then translate it to radio. So that's I like RF. I prefer it. And Harmony does, by the way, sell a bunch of systems that use RF only. You can tell if it's RF if you cover the front of the remote with your hand and it stops working. That is an infrared. That's using light. If it still works, then it's RF. So that's the key. You got to have the capability that your device needs. And if it's an RF only device, radio frequency only device, then that remote, the Harmony remote, has to have radio frequency capability. Either get a different Harmony remote or the inexpensive IR to RF converter that Harmony sells for exactly that reason. I prefer RF. I think everything should be RF, but it isn't. So therein lies the problem. Jeff in Montgomery, Alabama. I think you're going to be the last call of the day. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Leo, I have a couple of email accounts, and I'm ready to close one of them. And it, of course, contains thousands of emails. And I'm looking for a system where I can just press a button, of course, and remove.
I think this must be our system, our phone system, because he's dropped out again. Press a button. I'm going to see if I can press a button and remove the emails. You want to delete them all at once. Probably the easiest way to do this, and this is something most email clients will do, is it now on IMAPs. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that's the easiest way to do it. If that email system offers POP access, you can do it by telling your email client to delete the mail off the server after it fetches it. That's one command. You'll go and you'll fetch the mail. It'll download all that mail and then delete it from the server. You'll have it locally, which is great. It's locally searchable. Make sure you back it up. If it's an IMAP server you're using, though, that won't work. On the other hand, you can tell your IMAP client to cache all that email or download it. And depending on the server, there are third-party tools. There's one, for instance, for Gmail that will download all the Gmails and then delete it. But the best thing, and I would guess that almost any service you're using will offer POP3 access. The best thing is you turn on POP3 access in Gmail. That's the setting in the regular settings. And then use Outlook or Thunderbird or any email client as a POP3 client. That may mean changing the server settings. And then check the box that says delete mail after download. That'll get rid of it all. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks to Mike Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Thanks to you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll see you next week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.